Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. With these podcasts, Father Vazquez provides a very distinct and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or at epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Welcome to The Next Step. Hey, this is Father Vazquez, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step. Podcast dedicated to looking at life, inspecting the very fabric of our being, and doing it all through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission and is brought to you by the cool folks at epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. So if you're ready, I know I am, let's take The Next Step. We are right in the middle of something always, aren't we? And we were in the middle of Easter week a few weeks ago. Then we were in the middle of genocide commemorations. And here we are. I am in the middle of a week. Well, it's one of those necessary evils, you know. Remember I once told you about this 30-70 split I have in my life? Like if I could get away doing 30% of the things that I don't like to do to support 70% of the things that I do like. Well, I'm right in the middle. I'm right in the middle of the 30% right now. And that's called a diocesan convention. Yes, as a priest, you are tied to a diocese. And the diocese have their orders and they have their structures. And that's why I always tell you about Armodoxy, don't I? I always tell you about Armenian Orthodoxy. Like, what would the faith be without all of this order and everything? Maybe it might be chaos, but I hope not. I hope you find something more than chaos over here. But sometimes it seems like it, doesn't it? Anyway, I am right in the middle of some meetings that are going on, this necessary evil. I'm going to be talking about that, sharing that with you in a few minutes, some thoughts on that. But we do have a great show for you, and I want to thank you for joining us today. And whether this is your first step with us, the first of many next steps with us, or whether you're a regular next stepper, you're running with us, walking with us, whatever point you're at with us, I just want to welcome you and tell you how great it is to have you on board. Loved the email responses to all of the programming we did last week, especially the ones from the college campuses. We were at GCC, at Santa Barbara, at USC. I've got a lot to tell you. I mean, we have commemoration follow-up to do, but also I'm glad you plugged into our stream that was coming from our 30-hour famine. I mean, you know, we are like right in the middle of just about everything. We did a commemoration, we did a famine, and that's why I tell you, if I'm doing a necessary evil right now, I'm sitting in meetings, but also I've got my little notebook over there, and I'm taking some notes, kind of putting it all in perspective, and getting some notes that we hope to dump later on our blogs and everything. But I've got to tell you a few things real quickly of what to expect today in our show, because we've got a jam-packed show. And I know there's something that's going to interest everybody. First of all, thank you for the emails, and especially thank you for the emails that came from, well, some people who are just following along, and I'm always just very impressed at the quality of listeners that we have here on The Next Step. People from different walks of life, people from different backgrounds who were plugging into the entire idea of what is an Armenian Genocide commemoration. And we ran the gamut. I mean, people who were just interested in learning about the background to it, to people who really knew about it and were finding a way of tying that in with, well, what we want, what we like to do, and tie it in with genocides that are taking place today. I mean, isn't that kind of absurd? Huh? We're sitting in the 21st century, and we're still talking about genocides taking place. I mean, to me, that is the most absurd thing, that as a civilization, 21st century, I mean, with all of our advances as humanity, we're still talking about something called a genocide, people doing away with other people, and nobody really to call them on it? Well, it's not as absurd as you might think, because you'd be surprised how quickly people forget. I mean, what was it? It was only about 15 years after the Armenian Genocide. Armenian Genocide takes place between 1915 and 1922-23. And just 15 years later, as Hitler is invading Poland, he gets advice from the top brass that says, hey, you can't get away with this. And he says, don't worry, I'll get away with it. Because who, after all, remembers the annihilation of the Armenians? Hitler! 1939. 15 years later. Not 95 years later. 15 years later. The world is forgotten. And it gives them the energy, it gives them the support, the validation to go through with it. Who cares? No one's going to remember. As long as you're a victor in history, they're not going to remember. Well, you'd be surprised. Here we are 95 years later. I'm going to tell you a couple stories today. One that will blow your mind that right here, right under our noses here in the Southern California area takes place. Another one, a brave young lady on the other side of the country in the United States of America talking about genocide. And we've got an interview with her coming up right after today's Song of the Day. I've got to tell you, we've got a show that's going to be bringing all kinds of things together. The famine, let me just give you, I know people are waiting for the final figure. We are hovering right around $25,000. And that money goes to children who are in the refugee camps of Darfur. I mean, think about it. You know what they used to call us? They used to call the Armenians the hungry Armenians. Hungry Armenians feeding other hungry people today? It's kind of wild. Well, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But even greater than that is the attention that this little act of kindness and goodness and love got. Because there was a group that joined us on the other side of the planet in Armenia. And there was a group that joined us here in Glendale. I'm going to tell you all about that in a few minutes. But as you know, we start off every podcast with a song of the day. And today, well, we're going to go backwards a little bit. A couple weeks ago, I played for you a new artist that I discovered. Oh, I didn't discover the artist. I discovered his music that, you know, I didn't know about it. He was actually in Argentina and came across him on a street called Armenia. His name is Gagi Gasparyan. We played a bit of his music a few weeks ago and we got a great response. Here's another selection. It's called Surp Surp. This is the Holy, Holy, Holy that is sung during the Armenian Mass. He plays it on a traditional Armenian instrument called the duduk. That was Gagi Gasparian playing Surp Surp. And you could check him out at GagiGasparian.com. We'll put a link to his website on our show notes. But I hope you enjoyed it. I know we got some wild responses to the last one. The duduk, of course, is a double reed instrument that has been made popular in the last, I'd say, couple decades, especially by the likes of international artists like Jivan Gasparian. And it's been used in like movies like The Passion, and Peter Gabriel did some work with it. So it's been... it's been very popular lately in a lot of music. And like this, I mentioned this story a couple of weeks ago. I was walking right in Argentina in Buenos Aires, and I was with a cousin of mine who said, "Oh, this is Gagi Gasparian." And it was kind of surrealistic because you're walking on a street called Armenia. It's like maybe about 8-9 blocks long, and there on this one block you've got like all these different Armenian centers, and of course this gorgeous cathedral there. And here is this artist just sitting there and having some coffee, and this priest from America is walking by, and we met each other at that moment, and he gave me his CD, and of course I gave him a copy of the Gore CD, which we had published over here. So it was kind of an exchange on international grounds with, well, the language of God speaks, basically, right? Isn't that music? Isn't that what... mathematics is God's language. But I want to think that duduk music comes pretty close. Anyway, you know what I'm getting at. It's just great to have this Song of the Day feature to our program, because it just sets us in the mood. And I got so much to share with you today about the Armenian Genocide commemoration. And you know, when we talk about Armenian things, we want to also broaden it, because we've got so many listeners from throughout the world that are really engaged in different activities and are finding some value in Armenian Orthodoxy, what we call Armodoxy. But listen to this. The whole idea of what we call Armenian Orthodoxy is really based on this one event that takes place in 1915. Because as much as we call the Armenian Orthodox faith a 2,000-year-old tradition, dating back to the time of Jesus Christ and later his apostles bringing it to Armenia, we also have to acknowledge that basically what we have today as the Armenian Church is a 95-year-old institution. Because what the Turks did on April 24th, and you know that date is not just some day that we pulled out of the air. That was a date that the beginning of the genocide, the deportations began. The Turks targeted the intellectual crowd, the intellectual population of the Armenian people. The intelligentsia was deported, and basically the idea was, you know, strike the shepherd and the sheep will die. And that was the plan of the Turks. And so they hit the church where it would hurt, because after all, the church was not only a spiritual institution, but while the Armenians were in captivity during those many centuries, the church became this national institution, this institution that was keep basically the kingdom on earth, the Armenian kingdom. And so your Catholicoi, your bishops became the princes, not only of the church, but the princes of the people. And so strike the church down, and basically you will strike the people down. There's an incredible book called Teotik, actually Teotik, the writer, Golgotha of the Armenian people, Armenian nation, clergyman. And what this scribe does is he chronicles and... well, just, it's an incredible story. I mean, one story after another. And he starts with the most famous clergyman, Gomidas Vartabed, and he goes to the most obscure clergyman who's sitting in some village who refuses to deny his faith and gets massacred. This book, Golgotha, it chronicles something like, I believe it was something like 1,300 Armenian clergymen throughout Anatolia, throughout traditional Armenia, who were slaughtered, who were martyred. And back in 1990, wow, that's almost like 20 years ago, I remember I did I compiled them in a database, and that database is online somewhere. If you do a Google search, you should find it. That database is 1,200 clergymen, Orthodox, Catholic, as well as Protestant, who refused to give up the faith when confronted with the Turkish sword. And basically, it was because they refused. This is the irony of it all, right? In refusing that you become the martyrs, but that in that martyrdom, people find the strength and they find the will, the commitment to continue. So what we have as a church today is a 95-year-old institution in many ways. Sure, we have the prayers from ancient times, but that look has been defined by this genocide. And I'm saying this as a prelude to this discussion that we're going to have today, or today's topics, because many times people say, well, why are you spending so much time on the genocide? I mean, this is past history, ancient history. There is something about remembering, but also in remembering and acknowledging that history, you're also acknowledging who you are today as a person. And this is true whether I, as an Armenian, speak to you, or whether you look at your background, whatever your background may be. When you come to terms with that background, you're able to define yourself, and in so defining, you're able to, well, basically take a better handle on life. So I want to share with you some ideas that popped into my head after this genocide commemoration, as well as some stories of what happened, because, like I said, we had the famine. It was a positive way of dealing with the genocide, but also we had some commemorations. In a few moments, you're going to hear a young student, a college freshman, who takes the genocide story somewhere where they've never heard it before. But something happened right under my nose that I need to share with you. I need to tell you this because, you know, I'm a proud Trojan. I am a alumni of USC, the University of Southern California. I'm very proud of that. My father was an alumni of that institution, and my children go there. One of them's in there. One of them graduated there. I'm very, very proud of that institution and what it can do. But I've got to tell you, completely, completely disappointed with what happened this past week. Last Wednesday was the genocide commemoration, and for the last 12 years I've been the chaplain for the Armenian students over there, and traditionally they invite me to speak on April 24th or within the commemoration process. This year it was on Wednesday, and we got together in front of Tommy Trojan. He's the icon, the mascot of the school, and there the Armenian students assembled. The Element Band played some tunes, great, great music, sort of showing that, hey, you know, we're still living. And there was a Jewish professor who spoke about the Holocaust and tied it in with the Holocaust. And of course, I was the speaker there talking about the importance of remembrance and tying it in with Darfur. And after this event took place, the Annenberg School of Communication and Journalism at USC was covering it. Annenberg. Now, this is big time, folks. Okay? They were covering it. Now, the name of the program that we had was the Armenian Genocide Commemoration. The Annenberg School of Communication and Journalism was covering it. They came and interviewed me, and they interviewed the professor that spoke. That evening, they played this on USC TV. Guess what? No mention of genocide. It was a commemoration of the tragedies that befell the Armenian people. Now, okay, maybe there's some journalism that's involved in there. There's some journalistic license. You want to be at least a little bit open to the possibility that these mistakes were made inadvertently. But the name of the program, the name of the event, was the Armenian Genocide Commemoration. As a journalist, isn't your first duty to at least get the facts? No mention. No mention. Instead, they showed the Armenian commemoration. They showed one student who talked about her losses, her family's losses. And then they dedicated half of the small little report to the Turks. They put a microphone in front of some Turkish students and said, how do you feel about this? And he says, well, it's not a genocide. This was just an act of war. These things happen. Now listen, folks, everybody's entitled to opinions, right? But you have a genocide that took place that has been documented by the ambassador of the United States. Ambassador Morgenthau documents this. It's been documented by the New York Times. I mean, there's no question, did a genocide occur? There really isn't. You want the truth of it? I mean, I lost enough family members to document a genocide right there. And unfortunately, I'm not unique. 1.5 million people. You've got, you know, something like 2 million Armenians living in Armenia before the genocide. And by 1923, you're down to 150,000. What happened to these people? What happened? Anyway, here's what got me. Not only did they miscommunicate this information, not only were there gross factual errors in their reporting, but they had the audacity to stick microphones in front of Turks who denied the genocide. Now, I want you to think of any other event like this. Can you possibly imagine the coverage of the Holocaust commemoration? The Nazi Holocaust, the Jewish deaths, 6 million. Can you possibly imagine coverage of that event and then sticking a microphone in front of somebody of German background and saying, what did you think of this? And that man saying, well, you know what? It wasn't a Holocaust. Germany was just engaged in a war and these things happened. You can't imagine that, can you? Can you imagine a documentary about slavery in the United States? And then taking a microphone and shoving it in the face of a white supremacist who says, well, you know what? These black people coming from Africa, they weren't all human, and we regarded them as subhuman, so we brought them as slaves. That's the angle to it. No, I can't imagine that. I really can't imagine that. I can't imagine any professional reporting organization, let alone a university where you're supposed to be after the truth and the ideals. A university like Southern California, USC, which has a proud, proud background, a proud, proud history, stooping so low as to kneel to the pressures of politics and not mentioning the genocide in their report. And even more sad is that, well, aside from me right now, I don't think there's anybody protesting it. I sent out a letter to some of the administration. I sent out letters to the Armenian Student Association as well as some professors. But it's basically, well, it's been a week. It's been forgotten. And you know what? This is where programming like ours is so important, because you've got to be that voice out in the wilderness to call it. You know what? Many times when we call it on the Armenian church, it's because of a deep sense of love for that institution that we call it. You know, what did Martin Luther King say? He said, there can be no deep disappointment where there is not deep love. I mean, yes, I'm disappointed with where the church is. In the same way, I'm disappointed with the truth element in all of this. You know, I mean, people are out there and they're hoping that Obama's going to sit there and say that this was a genocide, or the United States is going to, you know, we got to get beyond that. We're not looking for recognition. It is already a recognized genocide. It did happen. There's no question about it. It's not up for debate. It really isn't. But unfortunately, we keep throwing it back out for debate. Whose fault is that? We saw Taner Akçam last week. Not last week, a few days ago. He was at USC talking. And very interesting professor from Turkey, who says, yes, it is a genocide, but he says, before you admit it as a genocide, admit that it's a crime. It's a crime that has been committed. Okay, at the very least, let's call it that. But you see, what we're getting at over here is the distortion of truth. And where there is distortion, that's where, well, as Christians, and this is, I made this point at all of the venues I spoke at last week, because this was very important to me, because we had a lot of non-Armenians attending these events. This is not an Armenian issue. This is crimes, these are crimes against humanity. This is a human issue. This is why it's so important for me to be out there talking about Darfur. This is why it's so important for me to tie it in with Rwanda. You see, the Armenian genocide was the first step. It was the first genocide of the 20th century. The next one was the Holocaust. Then came Cambodia, then Bosnia, then came Rwanda, and now it's Darfur. It's the same evil. It's all the same evil. It's called genocide. It's when one group of people decides that another group of people cannot exist, no longer have the right to exist. And genocide is much different from war. It is sanctioned by the government. It's the government putting its seal on it and saying that this group of people cannot live. So I'll keep you posted. This is not ended right here, and I'm going to keep you posted. There's so much to do out there and so much to really talk and share with. And just God give us all the patience, give us the strength to pursue truth. And I have to emphasize, you know, that's really part of the wonders and the beauty of this type of podcast that we do. Because, you know, I thank God every day that we do live in a country like America where we have this opportunity to raise our voice against injustice. And today we have that opportunity, especially in the context of the Armenian Genocide. Hey, you're going to hear about one young student's pursuit for that truth coming up right after this small message from our friend and producer. Here's Susie.
Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now entering the third year of production and growing daily with new listeners around the globe. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armedoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. Epostle.net is the voice of Armedoxy, committed to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we need to avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at the In His Shoes website. This is Susie, thanking you for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that little reminder. It gives me a chance to catch my breath, sip on my coffee, which is now cold, by the way. Okay. Yeah, you got it over there? Okay. My cold coffee, and also gives us a chance to acknowledge some great people. Want to thank Professor Nicholas and Janine Economides from New York, who are sponsoring today's podcast. And we want to draw your attention to the many ways that you can be supportive, including sponsorship of one or many of our podcasts. Just drop us a line at epostle.net, feedback@epostle.net, and we'll get you squared away. So thank you, Professor Nicholas and Janine Economides. Well, we are now going to continue with some genocide commemoration stories. Isn't that interesting? We used to have genocide stories. Now we have the commemoration stories. Actually, I gotta tell you, this was kind of, it was kind of a wake-up call. I think I felt it a few years ago, but it was kind of pronounced this year. We were at Glendale Community College, and Dr. Levon Marashlian was there, and we looked at each other, and we kind of realized that we're speaking, we're holding a genocide commemoration, and for the first time, if not the first, maybe the second, third year, that we haven't had genocide survivors in the audience. And I remember when we used to speak at these events, it would be traditional to bring one or two survivors that could at least articulate a few words that could share some of the pain and the horrors of that time. I mean, that's why I say that could, because it was so painful for them. So at the very least, they would be present there, sitting there. And this year, they weren't. And it's just another reminder that, well, the genocide survivors are gone. And the very few that are still around are suffering many of the difficulties of old age brought about by age, either physical or dementia, whatever it might be. And so basically the torch has been passed now. And so we become the survivors. survivors of the genocide in a different way, carrying that torch, carrying that story forward. And I'm very happy to share with you the story of one such young torch bearer. Her name is Madeline McGrublian. She is a genocide survivor. She's a freshman in college, but I say genocide survivor because she has grown up with the stories of the genocide and basically her life, and she's going to share some thoughts with us at her college. She's at Williams College over in Massachusetts, and a few days ago I had a chance to Skype with her. Here's the conversation. I'm talking with Madeline McGrublian, a freshman at Williams College over on the East Coast. How are you, Madeline?
I'm good. Good, yeah. Massachusetts right now.
Massachusetts, long way from home. You're from Pasadena, I know, right?
Pasadena.
And how has that transition been for you? This is your first year.
Yes, this is my freshman year. It's actually been easier than I thought it would be. I've found my classes are very interesting. I've made a lot of friends. I've been able to do some theater, so it's been really good.
And how about the transition as an Armenian coming from Southern California, like one of the major Armenian centers, to a place like Williams College? How many Armenians? Are you the only one? What's going on?
Well, I actually just met another one today. People over the past week have been pointing out some more Armenians, but I mean, if you add up all the halves and quarter Armenians, they're probably like six or seven total on campus, but I don't know any of them that are from a New York or Southern California or someplace with like a big Armenian population.
Now, when you're talking about six or seven, you're talking about 6 or 7% of your campus is Armenian?
No, I'm talking about people.
I knew that. I'm just kidding with you.
No, I understand.
It's just that I was here in Glendale, Glendale's Community College. 36% is Armenian.
Wow.
Just having some fun. Okay, so there's 6 or 7 of you on campus, and April 24th comes, goes. And what did you do? How did you commemorate?
Well, I knew that I wanted to do something, but I didn't know any of the other Armenian students. And if I met them, then it was only briefly, and they're like, oh, my mom's Armenian, but not really into the culture or anything. Mm-hmm. So I knew I wanted to do something, so I decided to start out by putting posters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put posters up last Sunday. Because I was planning on putting a table in front of the student center with some information about the genocide. And so I decided that, okay, if I put the posters up Sunday, then on Wednesday the 21st and on Friday the 23rd, I'll have a table outside and, you know, get people interested and give some knowledge.
Okay, and the posters said what?
I made 4 different posters. Uh-huh. Two of them dealt with the famous Adolf Hitler quote, "Who today speaks of the annihilation of the Armenians?" One of them was just that quote that said Adolf Hitler, I think 1939. And then another had the full quote. He talks about Genghis Khan and the living space that they need. So one poster was just the quote. Another was the full quotation. One more was the document by Morgenthau. It just says about the peaceful deportation of Armenians. And then a fourth one was a quote by Talat Pasha, something along the lines of, "What more do you want? There are no more Armenians." So I put about 40 of those posters up in the student center on Sunday night.
Okay, 40 posters. Let me get this. Let's review this now. 6, 7 Armenian students on the entire campus. You put up 40 posters, and on these posters you have the Hitler quote. Are there any demands on these posters?
No, it was just the quotations, because I wanted to kind of pique people's interests. Uh-huh. People would see them, be like, what is this? And then about 2 days later, that's when I would start sitting outside with my poster so people could like associate me with the posters.
Okay, and then what happened? Okay, one-man show. You're sitting there with the posters. Did anyone come? Did anyone see? What happened next?
The next thing that happened, so I put them up Sunday night around dinner time, and actually some people saw me putting them up. Some of my friends were like, oh, that's so cool. You need some help. So some people knew it was me. So the next morning, Monday morning after my science class, I go to the student center, and I find that every single one of my posters has been taken down. Every single poster, and I, you know, my immediate thought was, okay, someone saw the Hitler poster, or worst case scenario, some student who was really opposed to acknowledgement of the genocide tore them down. That was my worst fear. And then I thought about it and realized, well, someone probably saw the Adolf Hitler quote and didn't put two and two together and just tore it down because they saw the name Hitler. Okay. So what I did is I went upstairs to the Office of Campus Life, and I asked the secretary there. I said, "Hi, I put up some posters. They were taken down." She was like, "Oh, well, a student was offended by the posters and took them down." And she was very cryptic about it, and she seemed very cautious around me. I think she thought I was going to, I don't know, do something, but I was very calm and just wanted to know the name of the student, and I found out that he was, he's a very prominent student on campus, active in political life, and he is a very famous member of our Jewish Students Union. Mm. He's very into that. And so when I found out his name, I sent him a brief email saying, "Hi, my name is Nava Magrublian. I put up some posters commemorating the Armenian Genocide. I heard that you were offended by my posters. I was wondering if we could meet to talk about a way that I could, you know, speak for my cause without causing any offense to you or other members of the community."
And his reaction?
His reaction was like, "Okay, I'd love to meet with you at around like 2:30 with me, the dean, two deans of the college."
Wow.
And so I go to this meeting, and those aren't the people who are there, actually. It was him, the other college co-president, the head of the Students' Jewish Association, and then one dean. So it wasn't the same people that he told me. I'm not sure if that was on purpose or not, but regardless, when I got there, it was me, a freshman, and four old men.
Oh, wow, the old men, huh?
Well, one guy and three juniors.
Like the old McCarthy days, huh?
Right, pretty much. And so in that meeting, they first asked why I did it. And so when I gave my description of why I put them up, and I made sure to send home the point that there was a specific reason why I put up the Hitler quote. It wasn't, you know, just trying to get shock value. But for me personally, with commemorating the Armenian Genocide, I'm not as interested in, I guess you could say, the political aspect of it as I am the humanitarian. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to draw the link between, like, the Holocaust and the genocide, and the fact that, you know, people see the name Hitler, they obviously internalize that and know what that means. And so if I can get people connect the Holocaust with the genocide, then I'm doing something on the road to getting more people knowledge.
Right.
So I explained this to them. And then what happened is they explained their reasoning behind tearing down the posters. The head of the Jewish Students Association said that he wasn't sure if this was against the Jewish students on campus, because it had the name Hitler on it. And so that kind of took me aback, because it said nothing about the Holocaust. It said nothing like that. It just said, "Who speaks of the Armenians?" Mm-hmm. And so then I later found out, I was slowly putting things together, that the end of April is not only, obviously, April 24th, Armenian Martyrs Day, it's also the birthday of Israel, and it's also the time of the Holocaust remembrance, and it's also the time of Hitler's birthday.
Yes.
So all of these things happen at the end of April, and so the community is kind of on edge at that point, especially since the Jewish Students Union and the Palestinian Student Awareness Group were kind of having, well, I mean, they obviously have their issues with each other, but especially the end of April, that was heightened because the Jewish students were passing out birthday cake on the day of Israel's independence, while the Palestinian students were holding empty plates. So, I mean, there was a lot of conflict in that. And so what I believe is that these students saw my posters and immediately thought that it was an attack against them and proceeded to rip them all down.
Well, you certainly are in a hotbed of political activity over there. I mean, between the Jews and the Palestinians. But it's also very generous of you that you would go out and give an explanation to these people without deans there. Well, what was their reaction? So what did they say to this explanation?
They were really okay with it once I mentioned it. And the only point that was sore was the fact that I still wanted to put the posters up with the Hitler quote. Mm-hmm. I actually ended up not doing that because through our discussion, they kept saying that the poster needed more context. So I said, "Okay, I'm going to put that it's for Armenian Martyrs Day. Is that okay?" They said, "Well, we want more context." And so it kind of hit me that they really didn't want me to draw the comparison. Mm. I'm not sure exactly what their reasoning was, but I'm not sure if they were worried that I was belittling the Holocaust in any way by drawing a comparison between Hitler and the Armenian Genocide. It seemed a bit like that to me.
Yeah.
So, because they kept asking, you know, well, is there any way you can make this poster less obvious that it's a Hitler quote and it doesn't make the rest of the community feel safe when there's something said by Hitler? And though I understand, obviously, the shock value of seeing something said by such a horrible man, it's of my opinion that to understand history and to understand, like, atrocities that have occurred, you really do need to look to the past, and you have to read Mein Kampf to understand these things. You can't just burn every horrible thing that's ever been written without learning from it.
And in that same line, it almost sounded like these people were not aware of the Armenian Genocide. Am I reading that right?
They were aware of it, but only broadly. It was actually funny. One of the kid who's the head of the Jewish Students Association, he told me that his initial reaction when he saw the poster was, oh no, what if an Armenian sees this? That was one of the, aside from the, you know, visceral reaction to a Hitler quote, he was like, oh no, what would happen if an Armenian student saw this? And I was really taken aback by that comment, because I'm not sure if he was just saying that to try and connect it to me or to try and make it seem like it was not only for him and, like, the Jewish students' opinions, but, like, oh, he was doing this for other Armenian students.
Yeah.
That kind of seemed like a flimsy excuse.
Oh, I think it's way more, sounds like way more than a flimsy excuse. Hey, you're very generous with these people. Anyway, that's just me talking. But at the very least, there's some major education that needs to be given about the Armenian genocide.
Right.
So what happens next? So you set up a booth and people come by, or what?
Mm-hmm. So after the poster thing, I decided to put posters up again. I did not include any of the Hitler quotes because they wanted me to go through and actually email them the posters and have them approved. And I didn't feel it was fair to me to have my work judged by another organization, so I decided to just drop that. So I put different posters up, put my contact information, put that I was going to be having a booth in front of the student center. And so on Wednesday and Friday, I set up a table right outside Paresky, which is our student center, which everyone goes through there. And so I put all of my posters on the table, and then I put some, I printed out some firsthand accounts from survivors. I put out some maps with, you know, big circles for, like, big places of deportations and mass killings. I put some general information. I had the William Saroyan quote. And the most important thing for me was to make this seem official. Because, I mean, you can look at, you know, text about the Armenian Genocide, but until, you know, you have a reputable magazine or something, it's kind of hard to understand. So I actually found the 60 Minutes clip that aired about 2 months ago, I think it was end of February, about the Armenian Genocide. And so what I did is, while I was sitting at the table, I had that clip showing. Mm-hmm. It's about 12 minutes. It's really good if you haven't seen it. It's got interviews like Peter Balakian and stuff. And so I had that playing, and as people walked by, I'd say, hi, I'm here. April 24th is the day, is Armenian Martyrs Day, to commemorate the Armenian Genocide. If you want more information, I'm going to be sending a link to this really informative 60 Minutes piece. So what I did is I got people's emails and promised to send them the clip to the 60 Minutes piece.
Fantastic. Basically a one-man show, right? You put together this commemoration in a place that otherwise would never have known about it. So congratulations. That's fantastic. Now, I want to tell us a little bit about yourself, because I know people are going to listen to this and say, okay, this is kind of wild. I mean, it really is. Here's a young girl, freshman, going on the other side of the country, away from her home, different environment, different weather, at the very least, right? At the very most, you're learning to get along in a different lifestyle, new community, new friends, new education process. And here's a story, a 95-year-old story. Like, why? You got other things to do. Why was this so important to you? Why was commemorating, why was getting this message out so important to this young lady?
I mean, I don't know, kind of, almost to me, it's like the least I can do. I'm just really lucky to be in a place where I have the opportunity to educate a lot of people. Because for me, even though I grew up, you know, Southern California with a lot of Armenians, the school I went to in Pasadena my private all-girls school, Westridge, there were only a couple Armenians there as well. So when April 24th came around in high school, we had an assembly, I think my sophomore, junior, and senior years, we'd show clips, and so I realized that rather than, for me personally, what's more important is teaching people who don't know anything about the genocide. Mm-hmm. That's more important than, I think, even gathering Armenians and teaching us, because we're the people who already know. Right. It's the rest of the world who needs to be aware of this. And so when I came to Williams, I realized this is just a bigger version of what I did in high school. So I have an opportunity to reach to people who, you know, are going to go on to be, you know, the future leaders of America. And so to get this information out to them in a way that doesn't seem combative or anything would be the best way that I could make use of my time here.
So Westridge was really college prep.
It was in the sense of being around Armenians. I know you mentioned before about how, you know, what was the transition like going from an area with a lot of Armenians to a place without. It's just my experience with the Armenian community back home was church and family. I didn't go to school with them any Armenians, and so not many of my friends were Armenian. So that was kind of something, when I came here, I was kind of used to that, you know, just missing the church and family part. And so I'm used to, you know, explain, ever since I can remember, I've been explaining, what's Armenia? Where's Armenia? Yes, it's an ethnicity. Yes, it's a language. This is all religion. And so I'm kind of been used to that all my life, pretty much.
Well, Madeline, thank you so much for spending some time with us and sharing this story with us. I think it is so commendable. I know I speak for all the listeners who are engaged in this story because, you know, it is really difficult to do this in a group. And here you are doing this alone and doing it at your age when there's so many other options that you do have. It is truly commendable. It's a beautiful expression of who you are, taking your past and giving something for today. So I just want to thank you so much for sharing that story with us. I know it's going to be an inspiration to someone else to do the same. And God bless you. Wish you all the best. On behalf of everybody listening here, wish you all the best in your schooling and all your future plans.
Thank you so much.
Did you like that story? That was Madeline Magrublian, freshman over at Williams College. And yes, I have known her for a long time and always very proud of all of our accomplishments, as I was when I heard this story, and just had to share it with our listeners because I think these are inspirational stories, and more importantly, they emphasize to all of us the importance of remembrance, of commemoration, and not forgetting. Not forgetting. This is so important. You know, we have done so much work in the area of forgiveness. And you know that In His Shoes Ministries, it has one of its big projects was the 777 event. And alongside with that forgiveness is this whole idea, well, do you forget? And we always go back to Jesus on the cross. He looks down from the cross and he says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. But he doesn't forget. You can't forget that moment. Because when you forget, what happens is you have the ability, and not only the ability, it's almost for certain that it will happen again. It will repeat. And certainly, like we said earlier, right after the Armenian Genocide, the Holocaust 15 years later, you had Cambodia, you had Bosnia, Rwanda, and now we're faced with Darfur. And these are genocides. And, you know, the story of the one hand clapping. You can't make noise with one hand clapping. You need to bring a couple people together. Now here's Madeline, one hand clapping out there, right? Now imagine the strength if she inspires others. She gets a few other people on board. And slowly you start making some noise so that people cannot ignore you. And by doing this, I'm convinced that if we keep the memories of the past alive, if we keep those memories alive and what they lived for, what they stood for, we then have the strength to become better humans, better people, and not make the same mistakes, not repeat the past. Now, this past week, I want to finish with this story because I know many of you have written in and want to find out how did the famine end. Well, it's all connected because that was our way of commemorating here in Glendale. What we did is there was a group of us, about 30 people, got together and we fasted for world hunger. And the whole idea is very plain and simple. You know, many years ago, we started this process of giving blood on April 24th. And the whole idea is that in 1915, we gave blood against our will. Today, we give willingly for the sake of humanity. And that blood went out to blood banks, to people out there, not Armenians. Not just Armenian blood banks. And yes, if a Turk needed it, absolutely. I mean, what greater payback than the payback of love? And this is an incredible idea, you know? And it met a lot of resistance. I've got to tell you, at the early years, it met a lot of resistance. But I was so happy because this year, the ANC over in Pasadena, where we started this blood idea, they adopted the program and they collected blood. St. Mary's in Glendale, one of the big fixtures of Glendale life and just a hotbed for Armenian activity, was collecting blood and giving out to others. Well, in the same way, we said that, okay, it's enough that we're talking about our past without making a link to the present. And today there is a genocide taking place in Darfur, and certainly those people that are being exiled, that are being removed from their homelands, those especially in the Chad Desert, in the refugee camps, will need some assistance. So we have partnered with a great organization called World Vision, and we're making sure that the money that we collect goes out there and goes and benefits those people, well, gives them the nourishment that they need to survive. Because, you know, there is 25,000 children that die every, are you ready for this? Not every week, not every month, every single day. 25,000 children die of hunger and hunger-related reasons, causes. And so what we did is we said, you know, it's one thing to love, but you first have to respect that person. You walk in their shoes, walking in the shoes of the Darfuris, walking in the shoes of genocide. Why? Because at some point, someone else walked in our shoes and assisted us. So we need to keep that going, keep that walk going, take the next step to the next person. And so here we were, a group of us. Basically the generations, second, third, fourth generations removed from the genocide survivors. The grandchildren, the great-grandchildren of genocide survivors were now walking in the shoes of other genocide victims and saying, let's help. And everyone who fasted collected donations, sponsorships. And we collected upward of $9,000, which was matched by a very generous young man over in Arizona, Richard Malikian, and that money was then doubled, or it might be doubled, by World Vision to some extent because they have government grants. So basically, a small group of people raising $25,000 to $30,000 this year for world hunger. And, you know, in my mind, we're right after Easter right now. And what was the message of Easter? Why are you searching for the living among the dead? You don't look for Jesus over in the tomb. He has risen. And the whole idea of the Armenian people on April 24th is don't search in the tomb, but search among the living. And what greater position can you be in to show you are living than to be giving? Than to be loving, to be sharing. And so here are a group of genocide survivors helping others who are now victims of genocide. You want to talk about miracles? You want to talk about what real miracles are? This is it. This is resurrection. This is the whole idea of resurrection. Don't look in the tomb. These people are not there. The Armenians are not in the tomb. They're living, they're producing, and now supporting others. And that I think is a powerful message that needs to go out. I am so excited because this year it did go out. Like I said, we had little pockets of areas around us in Glendale, Pasadena, that were starting to think outside of the box. But really we had some great support from Armenia, where a group of young people got together and fasted with us for 30 hours. And we connected with them through a Skype conversation, met with them. They went to church. They did the same programs, and we've got a group of people that next year want to come in from different areas because of the prevalence of Facebook. Each of our people were sharing their stories with others, with their friends, and now there's other people who want to do the same. We were streaming on the internet throughout the thing, people, and throughout the fast, and people came in, and yeah, I gotta thank you all, because we didn't have any rude people showing us pictures of hamburgers or pizzas and saying, hey, look what we're eating, but actually praying with us and being in solidarity. And at the end of it, you know what? Here was another one. We got together and we broke the fast, breakfast. Our first breakfast was Holy Communion. The body and blood of Jesus Christ. The body and blood of resurrection itself. And when we took that communion, here's the clincher to this whole thing. The primate, the archbishop of the diocese, said, I'm coming. And not only am I coming to share with you your excitement, he says, I'm bringing a group of Jewish observers. Because, are you ready for this? They want to see how the Armenian community is commemorating their past. So we had made incredible breakthrough, incredible opportunity to really evangelize on a different scale. This is the power of love. And this takes place in our lives, in our community lives. Well, and as you see, it did for us as a group. We got together, but certainly these same principles work in our lives as well. When you put love as your first principle, and you combat every act of evil with acts of love and kindness, you find what Jesus is talking about. I am the resurrection and the life. Well, what is the I am? It is love incarnate. Love is the resurrection. Love is the life. Love is the only way and the only thing that can make sense, that the only thing that can bring peace, lasting peace in this world. But it depends on us to adopt it, for us to actually engage in those acts of love. And so last Sunday was a celebration, the Divine Liturgy, 30 hours of famine, the participants there, and then we had another group that came in off of the desert. Here was a group that was walking on the desert, led by Father Avedis Abovian. And he brought that group to church to celebrate with us at the Eucharist, at the Divine Liturgy. And you talk about, I mean, here is the miracle of miracles. One of the Turks, 95 years ago, said that there will be one Armenian left after the genocide. And that Armenian will be in a museum. Well, not only is he not in the museum, not only are we living, but we're celebrating the same rituals, the same prayers are being uttered from our mouths, the same liturgy is being celebrated that we celebrated 95 years ago. We're accepting the same Lord in our lives, and we are now forging a future. It's not enough to live. You need to be doing something with that life. And I got to tell you, I feel very blessed that this ministry has led us to this point. And I thank you for joining us. I thank you for joining us with your prayers and with all of your support. God bless you. In these ways, we find out that when Jesus said, I resurrected, courage, the victory is mine. I have overcome this world. I truly believe we overcome all of our difficulties, our problems. We overcome the world by connecting to that one source that gives us not only inspiration, but gives us that true life. Hey, God bless you all. And God bless everyone who participated with us and shared with us. I want to thank you for joining us. I know we went a little long today, but I hope it was a good ride for you. It was the next step. There were so many other things we wanted to get to. Ani, I'm really sorry. She had her bubble waiting for us, and today we're going to pass on that bubble because Ani's got some exciting stuff going on. And to tell you the truth, we've had some microphone troubles too. So hopefully we'll have that microphone resolved and we'll have Ani back with her bubbles. Hey, listen, for all the wonderful people who put this together, I want to thank you for being with us. Please join us at inhisshoes.org, where you'll find information, pictures from the famine, as well as our blogs, links to our blogs. Join us also at apostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an expanding and electronic universe. And get on there because there's podcasts, there's all kinds of resources that you can avail yourself to. Today's show was sponsored by Professor Nicholas and Janine Economides. We want to thank them for their patronage and want to thank all of you for joining us. For the wonderful team that puts this together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, who engineers these shows, and Ani with her bubbles, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.